Title of this forum is The Daycare Dilemma, Are Children the Victims? And there are a lot of ramifications to this, as you will discover this evening. We tried to make it as clear as possible that we're not going to just be talking about daycare centers. We're going to be talking about a lot of things that are a lot more important than that and go a lot deeper than that. And there are things that are a real dilemma in our country and some of our policies, and I think should get us to reflect very well on some of the kinds of attitudes that we have and some of the things that we encourage or believe or whatever. Our two resource people this evening are Ingrid Kretzmann and Stephanie Reeder.
You goofed that one.
Ingrid Christiansen.
Chris Johnson.
Chris Johnson.
All right, thank you. Stephanie Rieger. I didn't goof that one, did I?
I think you
were Rieger. Rieger.
Two for two, Arnie.
My name is... I won't try that one. both of them will be making some introductory comments, and I think from those you will have a feel for the kind of concerns that we hope are part of our forum discussion tonight. So I welcome you, and I thank you, Ingrid and Stephanie, and whichever way you have of introducing your topic tonight.
I will start and talk some about why daycare has become so predominant, and also talk some about the research on the effects of daycare on children. First, let me start out by saying the reason why so many kids are in daycare now clearly stems from the economy. The fact that it's necessary even to live a middle-class life these days for most families to have both spouses working. And I qualify that by saying that the huge increase in divorce means that many families don't have two spouses to support a middle-class income. So the enormous increase we've seen in the use of daycare can be traced very clearly to the economy. I think there are some people who think that daycare has come about because the women's movement encouraged women to leave the family. And that's clearly not the reason for the increase in daycare. It's very clearly traced to the economic situation that people are facing today and the fact that women have to work as well as men, in order to support a middle-class income. You can make it even at that level. Divorce is also a big factor in considering the welfare of children in our society. There's an interesting book that came out a few months ago by a sociologist named Lenore Weitzman. She looked at the impact of no-fault divorce in California. And the most clear result of no-fault divorce in California was to plunge women into poverty. And there were several ironic cases that she found of women living in $200,000 homes who were on welfare. They had no income themselves. It's very rare these days for anybody to be awarded alimony by the courts. It's even less rare if you're awarded alimony to actually get it, and it's true of child support also. So when we look at women working and the reasons for women working, we can look at the economy. When we talk about daycare, we need to be pretty specific about what we're talking about, because daycare can mean anything from let's say a room with 20 children in it that has absolutely no facilities for children, no books, no toys, one adult, where kids are plopped in front of a TV set for 3 or 4 hours or 6 or 8 hours. That can be daycare. Or you can have on the other extreme something like Narnia, where there's a great deal of care and thought given to a child-centered program. There are lots of adults per child, and that's a very high-quality situation. So when you start thinking about the impact of daycare on kids, the most important thing to think about is the quality of daycare. There are high-quality daycare situations available, but they are very hard to find, and they are very, very expensive. some reason, the people who work in daycare don't make high salaries. Not for some reason. It's not a highly paid profession. Taking care of children is not highly valued in our society. I think a simple measure of how much things are valued is how much you get paid to do them. And you get paid really a minimum wage to be a worker in a daycare center. Yet it's still, from the parents' point of view, it's very expensive. When you look at the research on daycare, what's usually done is to compare daycare with home care. And again, as I said, you have to think about what you mean by daycare. You also have to think about what you mean by home care. Home care can mean a mother with a lot of education who has her Dr. Spock in one hand and her, what's his name, White, I'm blocking on his name because I don't like his book. Dr. Seuss in the other hand, thank you, exactly. Who puts a great deal of thought into her child's every development. Who reads that book that I read very carefully, the first year of life, that goes through what happens every week of development and who panics when her child is not doing what he ought to be doing at the time that the book says, even though I think that's a very harmful and lots of, and it undermines parents' self-confidence in lots of ways. But you can have a situation where parents, be it mother or father, are very concerned and very caring of children, or you can have, to bring up the stereotype, a 16-year-old unwed mother who hasn't finished school, who's really a child herself, who has no resources herself, who has no support, who's overwhelmed by the situation she has found herself in. I did some work with students at the college where I teach where they were volunteering at a center that was what we used to call a home for unwed mothers. This is run by a Catholic hospital up the road from my college. And the hospital opened up what used to be a nurse's dormitory that the nurses weren't using anymore. Teenage girls and women of all ages who wanted to get out of their home situations and were pregnant would come there, live there, work in the hospital, and for many it was their first job. And then there was a lot of encouragement on the part of the nuns for these women to give up their children. My students ran discussion groups with the women there, and they talked a lot about why they got pregnant. And it was very clear that the reason these women got pregnant, and I call them women, although some of them were 14 years old, was because they wanted to be loved. They wanted to get the mothering that they hadn't gotten from their own mothers. And in some screwy way, that's a professional term, a technical term. they thought they would get love from this baby. Now, anybody who's even been close to a baby for more than 2 hours knows that that's not the direction that things go. You give to a baby, you can't expect to get from the baby the things that you're not getting from your own mother. So we have, on the one hand, home care can mean very educated, concerned parents with lots of resources who can go out there and buy a $150 baby stroller. I couldn't believe this, but that's what's out there. To a 16-year-old mother, again, who's really overwhelmed and doesn't really know what to do with this kid because she may not have gotten proper mothering herself. So if you compare home care to daycare, you need to be very specific and compare, say, quality daycare to quality home care. In the few studies that have been done on that, there are three things that seem to be apparent and that seem to appear. I qualify that by saying we really need to study these children who've been in daycare when they are 40, when they are 60, even when they're 20, to really know the impact of daycare. In order to do that, we would have to keep all other things in their lives equal. We'd have to make sure they all have the same income, they all have the same education level, they have equal resources in lots of ways. It's very difficult to do that kind of research. So the research that's done is short-term research comparing quality home care with quality daycare. There's three things that seem to be apparent. First of all, the kids in daycare, in quality daycare, seem to do just fine. They do just fine in terms of cognitive development and mental development and thinking capacity. They do fine in social skills. The second point, though, is that they tend to be somewhat more aggressive than other kids. And we don't know if that washes out by the time they're 10 or it doesn't wash out by the time they're 10. The third thing that we know is that overall there is much more child abuse in home situations than there is in daycare. The child abuse that occurs in daycare centers gets a tremendous amount of publicity, is shocking and is horrible, but is a tiny fraction of the child abuse that occurs. There's much more abuse going on within the home, and I'm just talking about abuse that we know about, than there is in daycare centers. So with that happy conclusion, brief summary of the research, let me turn it over to Ingrid, who's going to talk about some social policy issues.
From a less professional point of view, I should say. Mostly coming out of the fact that my husband and I have tried to experiment with a different model than the model that was handed to us, it seems to us that the priorities in our society are completely upside down. There's a poster somewhere that says, what if daycare were fully funded and they had to give a bake sale to hold a war? That's a paraphrase of how it goes, but you know, daycare centers are basically funded by bake sales, car washes. They're not well funded. The priorities in our society are not to spend money on children. I don't think this society values children. I don't think that children are important. I don't think that they're valued. I think that if you look at the way we play out our institutions and our federal expenditures of funds and our legislation, that children are just not important to us. I guess I'm arguing that we should move in a different direction and we should try to change that. You can pressure institutions and you can pressure a government to change priorities and to reflect probably much less efficient priorities that we as a people would say we value. We value a less efficient way of functioning, a less acquisitive way of functioning, a less climbing a ladder way of functioning in favor of some human values. And therefore, we could then imagine what several people in my life, in fact, do. My male dentist is a dentist 3 days a week and does child care the other day, and they live on less money. His wife is a midwife, and she is a midwife part-time, and they live on less money. When my husband and I had our first child, we cut back from 2 full-time jobs to 1 full-time job, which we then split between us, and we lived on half the income. We decided to live on less money. We decided that our children were the priority, and we could live lower. We could live on less. I think that's one kind of thing that we can decide as a people to do. We can decide that we don't need as much. And there are a lot of other reasons besides children to do that. You know, if we live on less, other people can live in some very fundamental way. Also, we can try to force our legislators to change and to allocate money. Our president doesn't believe that daycare is moral because he thinks it breaks up families. So he tries to block any funding that goes to daycare. I think that he's tooting in the wind. It's just an irrelevant point. It's not that the children are being left home totally alone or with older brothers and sisters who are being kept out of school or with cruel neighbors. I mean, the conditions that children are expected to live in these days in Chicago are the pits. They're horrible. It's just not okay to do that to children. I'm worried about the cohort, the friends of my children, the people who are their age mates who are growing up in the society who are going to be damaged by the time they're 6 years old by the kind of care they have to withstand. And I think even kids who are sort of warehoused in semi-adequate large daycare centers have to live in a place that does not respond to their emotional needs, that does not nourish their brains, that does not know what they think and encourage them to take the next step in their development. You know, if you leave a three-year-old alone for 5 days, if I've gone on a trip and come back to my child, I know that in 5 days' time, the child has changed and grown and learned new things. Well, I don't think they get that kind of, anywhere near that kind of attention. Most children of poor and working class families in particular, which is a large percentage of the children we're talking about. So I think our society should change and think about changing institutions. My institution, which is a university institution, struggled with the fact that my husband and I wanted to share one job between us because the insurance wasn't written that way. We had to lie to the insurance company to say that one of us was teaching full time and the other one wasn't teaching at all. And so then what we've done now for 10 years is for 1 year he's the official teacher and the next year I'm the official teacher and the next year he is, you know, and the insurance company is sort of going, but our institution has agreed to close their eyes to the fact that we're telling a lie. Now then gradually we've increased the percentage so that this year is the first year we've both been back to full time because our youngest child has been in first grade. But our institution bent a few rules for us, but we really had to push hard to get them to do that. Lots of institutions of our friends have bent rules for them. Stephanie's institution put a couch in her office when she was pregnant, you know, because she
was the thing they ever did for me.
You know, a wealthy university because she said she needed to lie down at noon when she was pregnant. I mean, that's sort of an extension of goodwill. But my husband does some work at Northwestern University and was asked to do several projects over the past few years that he had to turn down. So his career should have gone like that, maybe, and instead of sort of limping along. And he would turn them down and say, no, I'm doing more childcare now, and I don't have time. And people would sort of look at him like, this person is not a regular man, because he's not competitive, he's not trying to get up the ladder as fast as he can, take more responsibility, get his name around. I think that men and women have to be willing to do that. I think you have to say, if children are important to you, that you can't expect to get on the career ladder when you're 5 years old and not get off till you're 65 or 70. Life isn't like that. You have to get off sometimes to take care of an ailing parent or to take care of your own emotional needs or to be ill. But you also have to get off that or deviate from that path for children. Children are human beings, and they need human attention. They need time and attention from their family. But as a nation, we especially assume that men should just stay on until the very end, and then retire, and then we wonder why they don't know what to do. And we assume, or die. And we assume, women always assume that they have to sort of go like this. You know, they know that they have to do many things at once and patch together life. But why can't we say that institutions should change? Institutions should have good daycare at the place. We had a wonderful forum here 2 weeks ago where we were talking about communist nations, and there was a someone on staff here from, I've forgotten where, Poland, I guess it was, who said, well, my nation is a communist nation, but we have good daycare in all workplaces. And people get time off to have children. And, you know, she talked about the sort of humane things they do about children, and all of a sudden, it was harder to view that place as the enemy. This country doesn't care about kids.
Or families. That's the one behind this issue. If you look around...
Can you speak up a little, Phil?
Okay. Well, if you look around, what's happened since the Second World War is that... our society has kind of adopted the military attitude toward families. It's okay to have a family, but don't bring any of those problems into your workplace. And just keep that out there. And you see that over and over again. Now there have been some exceptions. You know, there have been some businesses that have provide daycare, good daycare, institutions provide good daycare. for their employees, but there are an awful lot of them that have said, don't bother us with that.
And even professional organizations like law firms that say, in order to become a partner in this law firm, we expect you to stay at work every night till 8, you know, or to really work long hours when the daycare that your kids are in ends at 5, and someone's got to be there to pick the kids up.
But I really appreciate what you're saying, Ingrid, because I really, you know, we can rail against society, but ultimately it's people like you that bite the nail and make those hard choices that make the difference. You know, I don't see how...
I think it's institutions. I think that it's people like me have to organize, all of us have to organize against the institutions. Individuals are not going to make any difference in this.
But I've been in the daycare discussion, and it's, you know, there's an intergenerational problem, too, in the church, at least, because people who raise their children in a different society say, oh, I took care of my children. I don't know why. What's wrong with these young folks? You know, why they don't do it the same way we did? We lived on less and all. We had only one income.
I think it's been very good for my children to have a father that's as full-time as the mother is. That he sees emotional stuff arising in the kids as quickly as I do. He and I can talk about those things together. He knows developmental, he has worries about their development before I do, as often as I do before he does. That the fact that he and I have split a job and split the children, raising the children, and split the housework, has really been a gift to the kids, as well as to both of us. I mean, neither of us would give up that closeness. When they skin their knee, they'll run to him as fast as they'll run to me. You know, and the emotional skin knees come around the same way. Neither of us would give that up for anything. You know, the money is nothing. The joy of the kids is everything. But I think that the male being there with them is something that he just insisted on and was real good for everybody. But he has had to sacrifice in his career.
Yeah.
I just would like to mention one example of influencing institutions, if you want to call it like that. In San Francisco, we have a board of supervisors who consists to the majority of women. And when last year they adopted the downtown plan, the plan which regulates the growth in the downtown area, there were some requirements put on the developers and for the people from the Midwest, where cities are. Francisco, we have had a tremendous building boom, and more high rises are being built downtown. And so, since there is so much demand, we could put some restrictions on them. And not only did we do some of the more traditional things and ask that the developers provide parks or open space in the downtown area, either on top of the roof or next to the building. But on the pressure of one of the women supervisors, we have now a childcare requirement that for every square foot of high-rise development, so and so many dollars have to be paid into a childcare fund. Either they have to provide the child care center on site in the downtown area, or it goes into a fund where the city or some organization, I don't know really how it works, provides child care.
Yeah.
There's some good signs and good what you're saying. I think that there are some signals are picking up. I'm president of the Child Family Services in Indiana, Kentucky. We're located with an institution right across the street from a big hospital. Hospital called us and asked us, can they install a daycare center, take care of children of their employees? But that means around the clock, you know, they've got three shifts that they have to do that. The cost is tremendous, but at the same time, you know, that a big institution like that is wanting to do that. The city is wanting to do that in Indianapolis also. And then I see it also with more of the young couples doing like you and Jody are. Right?
Nice to refer to us as young.
But younger than I. Mm-hmm. But even I have to change too, you know. And I see that assistance that we've had in our congregation, that they're giving far more time to their families than I ever did. You know, I'm red-faced when I have to talk to Seal about it. But at the same time, also, in my old age, I have to change because of Seal. And she goes to work now, because just to keep emotionally fit, you know, just in the, not that she has to go out for the economy's sake, but just to be emotionally equipped for living today, she has to go. So that means I have to do things today to share household chores and so on. So there are signals and signs of what you're rooting for, and I think we have to pressure for more and more and more of it. That's going to have to be done. But the cheering word about daycare too, with our granddaughter. But we noticed with only one child, they've only been able to have this one child, and that came late. That she benefits so much from that kind of good daycare that if she were home by herself with them, she possibly could not become aggressive. You said to become more aggressive. I don't know what that term meant there, but I take it to mean that they have probably matured quicker. Is that what
you mean? Give me that toy.
Yeah. Aggression among kids, kidding, function, the other kids.
Oh, yes, yeah, she takes pride in that.
She doesn't change her mind. My
question
is,
see how beneficial that is to her, too.
Mm-hmm. With the aggressiveness, would that occur, too, in families with many children?
That's a good question. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that comparison has been done. I don't know, maybe so. Maybe kids feel they have to be more aggressive to get what they need if there are a lot of other kids around in their family or in daycare.
And since we don't have families like that very often anymore, the daycare is sort of another form of that.
Mm-hmm. The usual format in daycare, if children are in a home, if children are squabbling about a toy, a mother will intervene or a father will intervene and make peace. In daycare, the more usual format is to help the child stand your ground and take care of things yourself, rather than to be the peacemaker. That's the more usual format. And that may have something to do with what's happening to the children there, standing their ground, instead of having peace made for them.
Are you saying it's not favorable?
Just saying it's a different... The ratio in daycare is in a good daycare, and children who are having trouble getting along, you got some age differential things here. 2-year-old children are really equipped from a developmental standpoint just to play next to each other. They're not in a sharing place yet. Children are not really able or ready to share toys developmentally and emotionally until they're 3 to 4. So we have young children, 18 months and 2 years of age, in the daycare or preschool setting where there are, and each one wanting the same toy, they don't know how to share it, and so they do what is developmentally normal and natural for that child, and that's to keep it for themselves. You don't have, unless you have twins, a bunch of 2-year-olds together in a home. You'll have a 2 and a 4 or 2 and a 5, and you can reason with the 5, and because of that child's reasoning ability, you make peace usually by giving to the 2-year-old, or by saying, pretty soon she'll be done with it and you can have it. Do some mediating sort of thing. Mm-hmm. In a preschool or daycare where they are age grouped, and they usually are, then you have a group of children not developmentally ready to share with that sort of situation. And so what you say is, you handle it yourself.
Yeah, I'm not convinced that type of thing goes on, though.
It's been my experience. It's been in the daycares that
experience in daycare has been fairly limited. And then I'm married and don't have any kids, so I have friends that have kids in daycare. But they've been a very favorable experience, and I think that the child is getting, in this case anyways, got a much better jump on socializing.
I'm not saying that's bad. Yeah, I don't mean to say that I think that's bad. I think that's just
different.
It's different, that's all, from what we are accustomed. And for me, you know, I like things quieter than most people do. And people have to say to me, just because they're noisy doesn't mean they're bad. It may mean they're just having a wonderful time. So that's just a kind of a different tolerance level that I think various ones of us have for rambunctiousness. Or, and I didn't mean to refer that.
It's hard to say what is right. Like you say, at age 18 months to 2 years, kids need to learn how to interact. If they don't have some mediation, some teaching, they're not going to learn it, I think.
And it's still going to take them a year to learn it.
Right.
real quickly, in terms of your comment, you have friends, you know, that are bringing to mind your comments. What kind of daycare situations are they in? Would you consider them pretty well staffed? Are your friends having to pay a considerable amount for that daycare? Or is it the kind that would be available pretty much across the board?
What I would consider a considerable amount, but for her it was a cheap daycare center, $50 a week. I hear
it's very, very
cheap. Yeah. But I was fairly impressed when I saw it a few times and visited a lot of different stations kids go through and during the day and keep them busy. It's just it's like sending a 1, 2, 3, 4 year old to school, basically.
I like to talk about daycares and talk about them. I mean, because children at different ages need different kinds of care. And I think selecting daycare is very difficult and very time-consuming thing that's going to be done well. Because young children need cuddling, loving, you know, some emotional kind of security. And a good ratio for children under 18 months is one adult to two kids. In part because that's such a rich language learning time. Although the children aren't interacting with you or talking, what is being said to them is being banked. And if there's nothing going on, there's nothing in the bank. And that's a very critical time when the ratio is very important, and that's very expensive. And you sometimes usually need a different kind of person to interact with 2 and 3 year olds. Because they're in the independent, I want to do things, and they should be able to explore and do things, and they don't need to be kept clean and neat and cuddled and that sort of thing. And if daycares, if the ratio of adult to child in daycare or preschool or whatever is not a good one, the tendency is to keep them visually busy in stations. Yeah, I know there's a place for that. But children learn language upon which all the rest of their learning is based by interacting primarily with the adults in their lives. Because it's the adults that have the better models, the adults that extend the information, it's the adults that use the better grammar, it's the adults that say what it's for and how you do it and some of those cognitive kinds of things. And if your ratio of adults to children is not an appropriate ratio at that age level, then we are reducing language competence and learning potential of those children. And that's what. And that's not to say that some home cares are just about as bad, because it's the amount or the level of interaction, and if parents are ill or tired, you don't do it. And so it's what's happening, I think, rather than kind of where it is, that is one of the factors that we need to consider. And sometimes a daycare that is too clean and neat is not really a very good place for kids, because there's not the kind of freedom that they need to explore. So there are a lot of those kinds of things that go into daycare. And another thing is, frequently parents will choose a daycare because they're comfortable there and they're doing the things that parents like to do. Sometimes we ought to consider a daycare which provides something that parents don't provide. For example, music or motion, so that there is some complementary development going on. So there are a number of things to look at and look for in addition to price when you're looking for daycare. And it can be an enriching experience and it can be not very rich. And I think some of those, what to look for what age child is very important. And sometimes you find it in the neighborhood, and sometimes it costs you a lot of money.
If I could maybe redirect the questions here, the form a little bit, I'm curious to see if some of you would respond to how much responsibility do you feel that our government in terms of policy or large businesses, corporations that would have the ability to respond in different ways, how much responsibility should be taken by outside groups to provide what would be considered by most people quality daycare, so that couples and families can, in a sense, go about their lifestyle without demanding the kind of sacrifices that maybe some people are making, and to do the kind of home care that
there's no doubt the society can afford it.
That's
not the issue.
Can afford it?
Of course. The issue is how politically do you achieve it. I mean, we can buy cruise missiles and they're never used, but we can't buy daycare because we don't know how politically to install it. I mean, we're inept politically.
Well, I think certainly the issue of what should happen is one thing, but when you have most companies not even providing decent conditions for the people who actually work there, it seems very unlikely that they're going to be providing for the people who are dependent on the people who work there. I like to sort of make it an aside, not strictly about daycare, but about children, if that's all right. Well, I'm struck very often by how little adults respect children in general as human beings. And even here, which is a place of caring, people come to learn about maybe issues that they should be concerned about that they haven't been exposed to yet. And so the adults are coming to sessions and shaking their heads over the control that our government is, the forces using in different countries where we have no business to go. And then I see some of these same people in the dining hall telling their children that they are not getting up from this table unless they eat all of your corn. And that's it. And those sorts of issues, that just appalls me. When you have, as a strictly unscientific observation, there's a lot of eating disorders that come out in teen years. Anorexia, bulimia. I don't know whether any scientific link has been established between those things and parents exerting this control even over their own child's tastes and what goes into their own bodies. But bulimia and anorexia are more common among women, and I think that control, not over just that area, but over all aspects of life, is greater for girl children than boys. I think there's a connection. Just in general, how it's very upsetting to me to see adults just not take children seriously, not listen to them, or worse, talk down to them. Even an infant can tell when you're not seeing that it's a human being, that you're treating it like a doll, a moving doll. That troubles me a great deal, more than any specific issue about children.
I think you're being pretty harsh for parents. And again, I'm not talking as a parent, but I think from my own parents and other parents I've seen, I think they absolutely, most parents absolutely try what they feel is best for the situation. And there is a lot of love and affection and emotion showed in probably the majority of the situations. Many times we focus on the 5% or the 10% that are abusing or emotionally abusing their kids in some way or another. But I think overall, even though it may not be right, it may not be the most effective way to deal with kids, I think most parents' hearts are at what they feel is best. And
that's not good enough. Well, I know that I had a lot of pain in my childhood about the way that my father treated me.
Mm-hmm.
How he told us. He told us quite frankly, I don't get any pleasure from your children anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I got pleasure from you when you were maybe 2 and 3 years old, when you could treat us like animals, like
yeah.
fuzzy little things. But when we actually were human beings, no pleasure there anymore.
Yeah.
I confronted him with it when I was about 18, and he said, well, you know I love you, and I just tried, and maybe I didn't always do best.
Mm-hmm.
And I told another friend of mine that, and he said, well, that's not a very good excuse, because it's like playing God, and then when someone says, well, you're not doing this very well, saying, well, I'm not God, after all. If you're playing it, if you're using that much power over another human being, that much control over every aspect of their lives, then it's not enough to say, well, I just did my best. And I know after the revolution in China, there were some changes made in a great many parts. And part of the change, the communal living, was designed or intended to make children independent from their parents as much as possible, not emotionally, of course, but in very real, practical ways, from an early age. And in some ways, it's very similar to the situation here at Golden Village. There were individual cooking units within each family or several families, but there was also a large and an ideal commune, large dining hall where meals were served and the children did not have to rely on their parents or food. They could just go to the dining hall at any time. There was entertainment provided free at various times. Child could go to any one of those things just as a child can here without having a parent along. There are specific situations here where an adult has to be along, kite making, let's say, but it doesn't have to be a parent. And it's these sorts of things where you have that. Then you are free to have the emotional bond with your child and have the strength be there, have the bond be one of love instead of the bond be one of need. If I do something that mommy and daddy don't approve of, what will they do? Will they turn me out of the house? Will my privileges be taken away? Will I not be fed? If people do that, send their child to bed without supper because they were bad, or I have a woman in the next apartment from me at home whose stepdaughter is having a lot of emotional problems and therefore a lot of acting out of that. And there were weeks during the summer when the child was just confined to the apartment or even her room in the apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Not allowed out for any social activities. Then you become a warden and not a parent. I think a lot of parents, certainly in this culture, are very afraid to let their children be individuals and be as free as possible because they want their children to turn out just the way that they are. It's impossible. It just can't happen. But I think a lot of people expect it.
Or
you were nodding on the issue. Why don't you throw in what you wanted to say about it?
Well, no, but I was nodding on before was and this is, I don't know if it even connects, but to push the button for me, for what I'm involved in,
with the church when I heard both of you say that somehow we don't really have a full regard for children, institutionally and otherwise. And I have to say I see that in the church as well. And that's why I'm saying I don't know how much of it is highly correlated, but I look at a couple of things, and whether it connects or not, I don't know, but it says something to me. I may see a congregation, and I sometimes look at their budget and what they do programmatically in Christian education and in youth ministry. And that tells me something where their priorities are. That's part of it. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, those two items should probably be, if it's a, let's say, a multi-generational community, maybe not even limiting it to that. That those should be some of the highest budget items in a congregational budget, both for materials and opportunities with adults and who knows what all. And I speak from my own parish where, and I've heard kids tell me this, and these are not children, these are junior high age kids, preteens, 11, 12-year-olds, where we can't get people to teach them. We'll get them when they're fuzzy toys, so to speak, when they're a little in preschool. But when they get beyond fifth grade, I don't want to touch them. They don't say that, but that's what the child is interpreting. And I had two or three kids say, "Pastor, nobody likes us," and that really hurts. And it not only happens institutionally in the temporal sense, but also in the sacred sense. And that scares me. And I guess it's and maybe I'm making more out of it than it is, but that's what I've seen. And when I hear people say that our youth are important, our children are important, the nurture that I was hearing this afternoon from Walt Langdon Sr., that nobody knows by being born that God loves them. There's something that is taught and is modeled and is experienced, and they grow by that, by the language that you were talking about, by all of that nurture, by the sacrifices that you and Jody make.
Probably the wrong word to talk about. What we do, we don't make it sacrifices.
No, but okay. In the societal term, you know, that's not a sacrifice. I'll stand corrected. But the priorities that you place, and when I hear that, and then when I see actions just the opposite, that fills me with despair. And that's all I wanted to say. I sometimes find myself very despairing.
I'm curious to know whether anybody, especially the parents here, have had any success with their institution. Institutionally, have you managed to get an institution to bend in favor of children in any way?
I'm not a parent, I'm a first grade teacher. And I teach in a church-related school. And to meet the needs of parents who had children coming to preschool and then need care in the afternoon, or children that would come to kindergarten in the afternoon, but they couldn't get off work to bring them, they opened a child care that first started just to meet those transportation type needs and after school care, but now it's expanded to the community around. And they were really afraid of starting it because they thought it was just another expense. But seeing the relief of parents, some parents that don't have the kind of choices that many do, several single mothers who can leave their children there and know that someone is making sure that they do get to school, that they will be fed, and then they're relieved to go to work. And it was a big step for the congregation to take, but they now see it as a ministry that they can't believe they, you know, didn't see before.
we're looking into that, and Latchkey Ministries are, that's a term that's beginning to surface. And how much of a priority do we place? And that becomes a definite budget item. Mm-hmm. It really does. And it takes sometimes some risks that we don't put it in buildings and in organs and in new hymnals and in building a new sanctuary. But it takes place in the things that you can't measure. And that's the growth in the lives of children.
Well, the biggest obstacle we have in our congregation is to convince the older people of the necessity of it, because they are not at all interested in that. We have a congregation where more than 50% of course are over 60 years old. And we had the biggest fight we have had in the last 5 years over creating a child care center for infants, an infant care center. It has taken over a year and really very, very bitter fights. And since it was opened, it's now 2 years, it's running very well. They're self-sufficient, but the older people, they're so afraid that any of the money accumulated in the church would be lost to their child care center. We have to learn how we can convince those older people that the church, the individual church, is not there to accumulate money or property.
Right.
And that property is not the most important thing, but that we have a mission to do, to service, to help our neighborhood. They did not want to hear that in our church.
There's a model in my community of neighborhood-based child care that seems to be working very well. This is in Evanston, Illinois, called Community Coordinated Child Care, 4Cs. Not necessarily in that order, but that's what it's called. This is in-home daycare, where there are a maximum of 5 children permitted in a home. The home is inspected, it's licensed, and the person in the home is usually a woman in her own home, is given a lot of training, and there are monthly seminars for her to go to and yearly programs for her to keep her skills up. And these homes are located all over Evanston. There's one person coordinating it, so a parent looking for child care can call there and get the names of 5 or 6 homes that are fairly close, fairly convenient. And that's another model. I don't know if that's funded by the city. I tend to doubt whether it's funded by the city of Evanston. But Evanston is a pretty liberal community, so it may be. It's about average. It's about median. I don't remember.
In our community, many of the child care preschoolers are in church buildings. It's just one of those things that is not. It's many in churches. And they are, the rental is just heat. So the expense can be kept down for them. Sort of thing, you get started in the community, it goes. I think.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they do it, so it's worked out all right. You have to have somebody to get started.
I'm confused on one point. Maybe you can straighten it out for me. You said I understood you to be expressing a concern, maybe I didn't understand it correctly, about whether or not a daycare setting can do as good a job as parents would do if parents were able to do that job. Then I thought I heard Ingrid saying, not quite directly response, but at least suggesting that the thing that a child needs is some of mother and some of dad and loving, cooperating parents, and that we should at least set our priorities to make it possible for mother and dad and child to be working with each other, I guess on the tacit assumption that really a third-party stranger, even if skilled and trained, is not going to make the same kind of contribution to the child that mother and dad normally would. And I thought I heard Ingrid saying that parents could, if they were considered loving parents, sacrifice in economics and provide that kind of loving attention toward their child. And then I thought the question shifted to the problem of money.
And that brought me a full circle back, because even if one showered money to subsidize the schools, and I'm back to what I thought I heard Stephanie say, you know, is this going to be another experience like the juvenile court where you throw all kinds of money at them but you don't get a result? And I'm not sure where I am at this point. Obviously, our society provides some funds for children. We have a school system. What we're talking about would be an extension downward for another, let's say, 4 years or 5 years of a child's life. And politically, I think that could be arranged. If anybody felt that that was the direction we ought to go, or is your message to me really that you think that we ought to take those funds and do something about supporting mother and dad, where there is a mother and dad, because that's a better arrangement.
Children are born into all different kinds of arrangements, and where there is a mother and dad is a fairly small number of children. Over half the children born in Chicago every year now are born into single-parent families, and something like 25% of them are born to teenagers. It's just not realistic to think about. I'm saying that if you are a middle-class family, that's one alternative to look at, is both of you earning less and spending more time with kids. But I think the main thrust of all of our energy in this area has to be institutional. We have to try to change the institutions of our society to make them value children more, both governmental institutions and private institutions like IBM. You know, I think that places where we work have to become more flexible, and where everybody works, and also I think the government just has to be more responsive in this area.
In a sense, you're being redundant at this point if the manufacturer pays a higher salary in effect to the worker, because that's what's happening. If the manufacturer provides child care, the manufacturer then, in order to be competitive and survive in the world, is going to have to be subsidized.
Well, the San Francisco model is a wonderful one. This new rule that they have, that they have to, new development there has to provide for child care.
You know, obviously, it's the same thing, and the same thing is true of Seattle. Every building must dedicate X percentage of its space for public use, and it doesn't have to be just child care. But obviously, that's reflected in the rent. Mm-hmm. And obviously, that in turn has economic consequences. And so, ultimately, we are talking about the one pie that we have. And how do we cut it, and whether it's funneled through family or funneled through daycare or funneled through money that's just paid indirectly in salary, is a question of utility. And that can happen in those ways. I just didn't understand whether you were telling me that you were in favor of parent and child, or whether you were in favor of out of the house, the suggestion you were making. Into daycare.
The point that I'm in favor of is creating a wider number of choices. And that might mean a woman who chooses to stay home with an infant for 2 years because she believes that's what she wants to do will have a job when she decides to go back to work. An institution that's willing, a workplace that's willing to guarantee her a job when she wants to go back. Or a daycare center there if she chooses to continue to work and put her child in a daycare center. I think what I'm saying is that the choices now are very limited. There are some very good choices in terms of high quality daycare, but they're very expensive and they're not very many of them. And we need to increase the range of options so that people can do whatever fits their personal preference and family situation.
And their economic situation.
Same question.
I think good daycare is a responsibility largely of the state. I think it needs to be organized at that level because that's the only level at which we can really afford quality care.
I think it's
which doesn't necessarily mean that I'm in favor of state-run daycare. That's a different issue.
The common denominator, what Stephanie and I were talking about, is that we're in favor of children having decent lives. However that works itself out in different kinds of families and in different kinds of situations. So I don't think we have, it's a very complicated society we live in, and there's not one family that a child is born into. but we are concerned about the kids.
Unfortunately, you're saying a little bit more than that in terms of incentives, because if each child is provided for by subsidization, then we shift the selection process, number of children, where they are born, whom they are born, circumstances in which they are born, and so forth. It is, I think, inevitable.
I have the responsibility of officially bringing this to a close for the tape as well as for any other reasons, but we can continue to keep talking here. So I've done my duty.
I would just like to make a comment
in terms of attitude, and I don't know if this relates directly or not, but I think a lot of what Ingrid and Stephanie have been pushing tonight gets back to whether we are willing to think about what our attitudes really are. I think we like to operate on the assumption that, of course, we love our children. And as a nation, we must therefore be doing the right things. And until we look in detail at what's going on, you know, we may be under some illusions. And there are subtle attitude kind of things that are kind of important. I personally feel that I have run up against this several times, even in my own experience in the ministry, in the career. The church verbalizes a great concern for family values. I mean, who is a more staunch supporter of family stability and values in the church? And that's where we're at, right? I would say that the majority of pastors that I personally know, I would put in the category of workaholics. And that means that they do not spend as much time with their families as I think they should. And personally, I have run into the mainstream again and again over against this family time issue. And I have found that a difficult attitude to buck and a difficult attitude to work with. And I guess in my life, I've experienced couple instances, one in particular, where I think I actually lost the job I had because of an insistence on taking a certain amount of family time because I felt that was important. And it couldn't be arranged quite as neatly as, you know, half time or something like that because I happened to be the pastor in the family. But, you know, attitude. What do we say on one hand and what do we really believe? What are we willing to commit people to do and still support them without, quote, demanding, I think many of you call it sacrifice, and you didn't like that term, but, you know, demanding that people give up something in order to provide quality care for children. Or that our attitude such that we say, well, that's a choice they want to make. You'll make that choice, that's your, you know, it's your freedom to make that choice, you pay the price. Well, if you want a career, you pay the price. If you want your children, you pay the price.
I have an example that just occurred to me that I will say, and then I will be quiet, and that is it occurs to me that you can deduct the interest on your mortgage on your house, and your income, that's right, as big as it is, you can deduct all of the interest. You can only deduct $400 for child care expenses, and I think that says something about the priorities of the country.